What's good, everybody? I'm Johnny Danger.
I'm Jesse James.
And we are the Dangerous Dudes.
So one of the things we wanted to talk about today was the aftermath of the NFL season. It's Super Bowl is coming up. We're excited for that game. But we, of course, have some observations coming out of the season, as we usually do. Most often with you and I, it's complaints or things that we want to ridicule.
Right, so full disclosure, I'm a Detroit Lions fan.
I'm a Buffalo Bills fan.
So we have a lot to bitch about.
Yeah, so that's kind of been a life of misery. But, you know, one of the great things about the season is the Bills are actually good. Like, they're a legitimate up-and-coming team at this point. They made the playoffs, and I actually thought they had a chance to win at least one playoff game. And so one of my complaints in this obviously is directly comes out of the Bills game, but I have been observing it for a while, and we both can speak about personal experience with this, but is with penalty calls and lack of replay. So at the end of last season, we have one of the most horrendous calls in the history of the NFL that put the Rams in the Super Bowl. Saints should have won. It was one of the most obvious penalties, and it's like, NFL's like, well, we can't review it. It's not in the rules. Can't review it. Sorry, Saints. Sorry, NFL fans. Rams are in the Super Bowl. Too bad.
Deal with it.
And it's like, well, that doesn't make me feel. And then they even apologize. That's the thing I love about the NFL with post, like in the aftermath of a bad penalty call, as if the apology means anything. Oh, sorry, they did get the call wrong. Just to kind of verify your anger, like, that call was wrong.
Just to put a little
bit
more gas
on the fire. But there's nothing in the rules that we can do about it.
Right. The other team, you know, gets a shot at the Vince Lombardi trophy. Right. You get an apology.
Right. So, you know, hopefully you're a little less mad because we apologize. So, like, this happened in the Bills game. There was a poor penalty call against the Bills. Josh Allen.
The Bills-Texans game.
Bills-Texans playoff game. Josh Allen had run for a first down. I believe it was in overtime. At this point, and they called like an illegal block on the Bills. When they replayed the call on TV, we have like the most incredible technology now to slow things down, get up close. It was clear that it wasn't an illegal block. It was a fair block, and it didn't impact the play anyways. So even if it was an illegal block, I would question whether or not you should call it if it doesn't have an impact. Well, Allen was already way past the play.
That illegal block that you're referring to, now that I can recall it in my head, I can see it. That's a new blocking infraction that they added, I think, last year, and it's horrible.
Could be, but it was, even the announcers at the time said, oh, that's a bad call. And of course, I'm watching the game at a bar, and it's mostly Bills fans, and the place is like getting violent at this point.
It's a bad rule.
And so it took like a first down run. It gave them like 3rd and 8 million, and of course they didn't convert it. They punt the ball. Deshaun Watson does the ridiculous tackle break play, and they get the first, and the Bills lose the game. And so, of course, on the Monday following the game, the NFL apologized, said the call was wrong, and but there's nothing within the rules to do anything about it. So my take on that is, this is such an easy solution. Why can't we stop a game, replay a key game-altering penalty call? Just make sure that it's right. If you're going to impact the play on the field, the play that the plays were executed by the players on the field, if you're going to interrupt that with a penalty call, and now the referees are impacting the game, you better get it right, especially in a key third down play in overtime of a playoff game. I mean, that's a pretty big spot in the grand scheme of an NFL season. Why is there not a caveat in the rules that allows for, okay, let's just take another look. Let's take a couple of minutes, look at it. And if it's not glaringly obvious as a penalty, why can't we just say that wasn't a penalty. Like, why does it take an act of God or like the Supreme Court needs to rule on this in order to change these rules?
I'll play devil's advocate here. Here's the deal. When you get into those situations where you're talking about a play that impacts the outcome of a game, you're gonna have the jerks that jump in and say, well, it's the same thing in the first quarter as it is in the fourth. No, it's not.
It's not.
It's not, because in the first quarter, the game hasn't really developed yet. You don't really know what's going to happen. Yes, the points are the same in the first as they are in the fourth. Nobody's arguing that. But just use common sense. When you're watching, when you guys are watching, our audience, I'm referring to, is watching a game, and you see the crowd get all riled up, and they're all standing and cheering and like going nuts, and like the play's about to happen, and they're about to say, down, set, hike. Are they doing that on first down? Right. No. They're either doing it on third or fourth down. Those are the big plays in the game. And when you have big plays in the game that are impacted by questionable calls at best, everybody knows it's a questionable call. You pointed out the Bills game, the playoff game against the Texans. My beef was the Detroit Lions regular season game against the Packers, where Trey Flowers was called for illegal hands to the face twice
at the end of the game.
And on review, it wasn't even close.
The first one was like, eh, that's kind of a stretch. The second one was like, his hands weren't even, it was like, where did that come from?
But listen.
It's such cheating.
To like, know that when you're making that call, you're not making it on first down. You're making it on third and long, where if you called it right, Detroit gets the ball back, the game is over.
Right.
They're going to run the clock. Right. They're going to beat the Packers. And at that time, Detroit was actually, I think they were like 2-1-1. They had that early season tie against the Arizona Cardinals. But I think you go to 3-1 against a division leader. Right. It's a big game. It changes. Now, you know, Stafford broke bones in his back later in the season. He probably still would have been on the shelf. Their season would have went to shit anyway. But just for that game, and this is what we're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is competition amongst paid professionals. It's a big multi-billion-dollar sport. If you're not giving, you know, the teams on the field equal opportunity to win that game, then what are we doing?
The referees, it's become clear, and I'm not saying this to come down on the referees as a group. It's a game moving at light speed. They're on equal, like, we're watching it up from above. So we can see things. They're on the same level as these elite, fast-moving athletes. The game is going so quickly. Of course they're going to miss calls. And, like, I don't think that that's an insult. And I think any referee, if they take it personally, has to like take a long look in the mirror, because it's a very, very difficult thing. And we now have like this state-of-the-art technology, the ability to go back and look and get it right. And the fact that they won't do it, because it might add, who cares if it adds 10 or 15 minutes to a game? There's nobody complaining about length of football games right now. Baseball, yes. There's a lot of people complaining about the length of baseball games.
Pace of play.
I haven't heard anything about, like, people want as much NFL as they can get. And if you have to start the afternoon games 15 minutes later, so be it. That way we have a more pure product and you don't have referees altering games incorrectly. And I think that that's a big problem. And the idea that the NFL will say, wow, we can't review that. Where's it going to stop? I mean, how about it just stops at big plays?
So we filmed a portion of this podcast on location in Las Vegas. We're going to show you footage from that, you know, as the podcast progresses, or you'll be able to hear it as well for the audio listeners. But one of those conversations that we had was when an official gets a call wrong. Like, let's say in a perfect world, and I think this would be a perfect world, what we all see on TV is what the referees and the officials can see immediately.
Right.
If we can see it immediately, they can see it immediately. Go under the hood, look at the goddamn play in question, make the call the right way, and if the league is worried about undermining the credibility of the officials because, oh, you know, so-and-so, like, you know, got the call wrong, so we had to overturn it. Is the audience going to be mad that that happened?
No.
Like, oh, what a jerk, you know, like, you made the wrong call. They're not going to care. They're just going to be, they're just going to be in a better place as a viewer and a fan knowing that they made the right call. It's understandable, like what you just said, like the game is moving so fast and at this pace and it's quick, like they're going to miss stuff. Nobody's going to be pissed that they go under the hood and say, oh, you know, we actually got that wrong. He wasn't offsides, right. Or it wasn't hands to the face, or it wasn't an illegal block. We're not going to be pissed at that guy. We're going to be pissed at that guy. Like the guy that made the non-call against the Saints and the Rams,
he got death threats. Yeah, it's insane.
They're not giving the guy death threats they're not going to give the guy death threats when they review it. Like, how long would that have
right.
been?
Yeah. It would have been 2 seconds.
Right.
Game over.
Okay, we
Saints
totally
are in
missed
the
it.
Super Bowl. Yeah, like, sorry, but we missed it. Like, and
isn't that a better way to,
of
like,
of course, especially
live?
Now that the NFL now has a policy of apologizing for bad calls on Monday. It's like, I always love the
That's
Monday.
That's the frustrating thing.
After
like,
the fact,
we
like,
can
well,
see it.
We have to apologize for the bad call. Like, who comes up with these ideas? We can't change the rules to allow for less. But like, we can apologize, and everyone's going to be fine with it if we apologize.
Like, oh, the next, it wasn't legal hands to the face. Like, okay, thanks. That and $1.50 gets you a cup of coffee at Dunkin'.
I wanted to burn my house down after that Bills playoff game, but on Monday when they apologized, I was like, well, okay, the NFL, sorry, I shouldn't be mad about it anymore.
Was it?
I don't want to be mad about it anymore because at least they apologized. It's like when they apologized, it just brought that anger back up because I was starting to calm down.
That didn't make you feel any better? Shockingly, no.
No, it's just a silly thing.
The other thing is the first down. You got guys out here, this multi-billion-dollar
with
you know,
chains.
We got these two guys out of shape with chains marking a 10-yard you know, spot on the field. We've had GPS like positioning us across the globe for like the past 10 years. You could just put like a chip this big into the football and line it up perfectly wherever it is on the field, and it tells you exactly where the ball is. What are we doing?
Instead of that, you take somebody's eyes, a play is moving lightning quick, it's like based on one guy's set of eyes where the ball ends up, and then they bring the chains out, and it can be like inches. It can be an inch, and they don't have a rule that's like, well, close enough, because like, oh, we had a guy using his eyes.
But keep in mind, folks, that what that yellow line that you see on TV isn't perfectly accurate. No shit. But you know what is perfectly accurate? A global positioning system that pinpoints it to, like, the absolute microscopic, like, fiber of where that ball is. What are we doing with these first down chains? There should be no chains on the field. None.
Right. There must not be.
Here's the ball. This is where it is. This is where you wanted to go. It's not there.
Right.
Deal with it.
They just must not have the budget for it.
They're on a shoestring budget,
they're poor.
I think.
I think they're struggling right now. So the other topic, or one of the other topics that I think most of the country is currently struggling with, is the overtime setup, where a coin toss can essentially settle a game. You have two teams that battle it out for 60 minutes of football, and they couldn't declare a winner.
ACL tears, concussions,
jobs all
on
this
the line,
time, tons,
jobs on the and, line, coaches' jobs on the line, everything, and it comes down
and
to
a flip of a coin.
Flip a coin.
If you remember last year's AFC Championship game, the Patriots went into overtime. Patriots won the coin toss, scored a touchdown. Chiefs never touched the ball. Patriots
game
go
over.
On to win the Super Bowl. Chiefs don't even get a chance to touch the ball in overtime. And, you know, I know there are, you know, these diehard fans that don't like to see rules changed. But the NFL did change these rules a few years ago. I don't remember which game it was in the aftermath, but usually when there's a rule change, it's because there's this monster public outcry and the NFL responds to it. Just like
usually
everything that they've changed. Right, and so they make this new sudden death rule where the game's not over if the team that wins the coin toss gets a field goal or a safety. It's only over if they get a touchdown. So it's like, we know we need to change it because the sudden death thing isn't fair, But we're going to leave the touchdown part of it in there just to have an aspect of unfairness in there so that people can bitch and complain and that the game doesn't make any sense.
So that Twitter can go on fire, basically.
Right. And you get these guys who are like, oh, I like the rules just the way they are. And then you got the guys that want the college rules. And they want to try to take the coin toss out of it. Or you'll have some funny ideas that involve kickers kicking like progressively longer field goals. None of those really are as easy as just making it. It doesn't matter what the team who wins the coin toss does. The other team at least gets the ball once. So like that would be the easiest. Like there's all these lengthy first take conversations and all this bullshit. It's like, it's that easy.
Right.
It really is that easy.
Right. During warm-ups for this podcast, we do have, you know, little bullet points or things that we go over. And then, you know, we just kind of let the camera roll, let the audio roll, and we just start talking like, you know, we would normally. We have these conversations all the time.
Right.
Like, we literally hung out Friday night and had this conversation. Your suggestion of, you know, just simply giving the ball to the other team to respond. And if they tie it, they tie it, and it goes again. If they kick, you know, obviously they wouldn't kick a field goal. Right. They would go for it on fourth down. They don't get it. They don't get it. It's not rocket science.
No.
It's a pretty brilliant solution to, like, a dumb
A big problem for the
problem.
NFL, I think.
It's
I think
a dumb
it's really,
problem,
it's stupid.
Though.
It's just dumb that you would keep
it
that rule in
It doesn't improve the fan experience whatsoever having it
right.
the way that it is.
Not at all. It's all it does is create frustration. And like when you're, if you're a Patriots fan after last year's AFC Championship game, you're just riding high on the fact, and deep down inside, you're like, God, I love that rule because I didn't want Patrick Mahomes to have the ball because they probably would have tied it, and that's bullshit. Like it's just dumb. They can change it easily. There's nobody that would have a problem with that change because it's nothing but fair. And it would show that there's actually at least a small amount of logic going around these conversations amongst owners and executives at the NFL that, hey, we've got a problem. Let's solve it. Okay, easy solution. Done. Like, to me, like, that's how you've got all these guys making tons and tons of money overseeing a billion-dollar entity, the NFL.
Multi-billion dollar.
You would think that these types of things would be simple.
One of the things that I think that we're in agreement upon, you and I, is the fact that overall the NFL is a great product.
Oh, yeah.
And what we get at the end, that two-week break after the playoffs and then this big celebration, the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. which is you know, coming upon us, Chiefs 49ers. We can do a quick pick. I'm pulling for the Chiefs. Which makes me think that the 49ers are going to win. That's my strategy.
I'm pulling for the
I
Chiefs.
I want the Chiefs to win. I think the Niners probably will. I think they're going to clog it. They're going to slow it down. Their defense is going to show the Chiefs a lot of things that they haven't seen before. It's going to get down to strategy. Close game. I think it's going to be like a 24-20 type of game. I hope the Chiefs win. I hope I'm wrong.
My prediction is Chiefs 23-17. Mark it down.
Okay. Okay, this next segment was filmed and recorded live on location in Las Vegas. So, we're not apologizing, but we're just saying maybe we weren't at 100% full strength.
Just like to offer that quick disclaimer so you understand our mindset. We're having a lot of fun, and we think it's pretty clear, which is why we decided to leave it in the episode. Hope you enjoy it as much as we did.
We really did. Cheers. Live from marvelous Las Vegas, Nevada, it is the Dangerous Dudes podcast, and we are tasting today one of the most delectable and delicious bourbons I've had in some time. Tell them a little bit about Larceny, Jesse.
So we've got Johnny Fitzgerald Larceny Bourbon 92 proof from Bardsville, Kentucky. It says, John Fitzgerald's weakness was fine bourbon, and he faced temptation every day. Cheers to that. So let's...
Here's to those who wish us well.
And those who don't.
Can go to hell. Mmm.
It's very good.
What do you think, guys?
It's pretty strong.
It's delicious.
But...
It's 92 proof.
Very good.
It's a slow sipper, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
I like it. Can't neat. I tried it with ice cubes last night. Full confession. Hold up the bottle, Jesse. Let's show them what damage we did. We got here, Vegas,
Thursday, five gents followed us, the rest of the band, our good buddies Matt, our brother Adam, and we took...
Robbie.
It's Caleb's birthday. It's been an unbelievable weekend. Forgive us for the sunglasses and the disheveled look. There's been some mayhem. But this bourbon right here really presents itself well. Neat. It's got a beautiful flavor, a lot of caramel. On ice cubes, it was really good too. It was mixed. But this is something I think you want to enjoy neat and naked.
Cheers. I'm going to give this 4 out of 5 stars, Larceny Bourbon. Check
I'm gonna
it
go,
out.
I'm going to go 4.5. But. Cheers.
Las Vegas. I cut my teeth on this road. My mouth is crowded with feet. I caged a bird, she won't sing. I wouldn't change a goddamn thing. That's a lie.
Such a good idea of what you want to say.
Guys,
why don't you just
chill
fucking
out
say
and
it?
Make it happen. It'll work out.
You guys, somebody's just got to step up and make a play.
This episode of the Dangerous Dudes podcast was shot courtesy of Paris Hotel in Las Vegas and is sponsored by Penny Royal TDD, the Nirvana tribute act by the Tijuana Danger Dogs.
Be sure to catch the next show by Penny Royal TDD, the Nirvana tribute, on March 21st, Ransom Steel Tavern, Apalachin, New York. Check it out. All the details on TijuanaDangerDogs.com and stay tuned to the Danger Dudes podcast for future news and upcoming events. All right, guys, it's time for Tell Me What You Think.
And you can offer suggestions or send requests or ask questions by emailing us at thedangerousdudespodcast@gmail.com. We have one here from Samantha in Shenango Forks. She writes, "Dear Dangerous Dudes, I really want to start a band. What advice can you offer?" Well,
I can tell you the easiest thing to do is find yourself a mate, have a couple of kids, wait 20 years, and then have them join your band, just like we did. Easy peasy.
Yeah. That's the straightest path. Yeah.
It's probably like your easiest thing. It'll be the best in the end.
A rock and roll band. Yep.
But no, really, the advice that I can offer is try to ingrain yourself into your local music scene. Go out to see bands on a regular basis. Go to open mics. Play some live songs. Record some videos of yourself playing music. Post them on social media.
Introduce yourself. Meet some people.
Yeah, go up and meet people at shows. You'll find that most musicians are nice. They like to meet people. And they're willing to help. And then start making it known that you're looking for people to play with. You want to surround yourself by people of like mind that are into the same kind of music as you. Obviously, you want to find some good players, like a good drummer is probably the key point to start with.
She didn't say what kind of band. I mean, right. She might be. She didn't really specify. She didn't say, you know, she wanted a bluegrass band, country band, rock band, you know, reggae, avant-garde, whatever you're into. But you're going to want to find people of like mind and, you know, people that want to have a good time. I mean, I don't know a lot of people that want to start a band to bore themselves to death. You know, like usually starting a band is kind of like an exciting endeavor.
Norwegian black metal.
Or right. Metal, like, but you better find some people that are into Norwegian black metal. and that are...
Burn churches down and kill people.
Right. Those are the folks that you want to hang with if you're into that kind of thing. If you're not, then you want to look in a different direction. But definitely, if it's a rock band, definitely start with a good drummer and work your way out from there. And then, you know, practice like a lot. Like play a lot. Practice a lot. Get used to being in front of an audience. Get used to like... critiquing yourself and being honest with yourself and knowing where you're strong and knowing where you need to, you know, work on certain aspects.
Record your practices. Practice a lot. Record your practices. Video your practices. Kind of make a concerted effort to work on the product that you're putting forth and be your own worst critic. But also at the same time, the most important thing from my perspective about having a band is have fun.
Have a good time.
Enjoy yourself. Have a good time.
There's too many things in life that you have to do. Right. This is something that you're choosing to do.
If you get to a point where you're not having fun, you need to do something else. You need to change something up, which is why I circle back to add band members that you like, that you get along, that are of like mind, that you have fun hanging around with outside of the band. That it really becomes what's great about having a band is because it's like you versus the world. When you go to play shows, especially when you're writing original music, you're offering up your own art for everybody else to consume. So you develop this like brotherhood, sisterhood with your bandmates that really is unlike a lot of other things. So that's why it's important that you have people that you like going into that with. So, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah, hope that helps.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Thanks for tuning in today. Stay tuned to the Dangerous Dudes podcast on Facebook, YouTube, and other podcast platforms for future episodes and exciting announcements.
And remember to email the show, thedangerousdudespodcast@gmail.com, to add to our segment. Tell me what you think, questions, suggestions, you know the deal. And also check out the band, t1@dangerdogs.com, for all upcoming events and exciting announcements. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.